I'm pretty sure you're the first person to come on my podcast that's probably packing heat, like it's a Glock 17. That's like standard FBI issue, right?
I don't know what I went out and bought my own. I think the last one I picked up was a 40. Okay. No, 28, a 40 caliber. I like the 40 cal.
Now that's a gun. I've got a little 22, so you definitely have the edge over me. Plus, I can't even hit a target from 4 feet away. But I digress. Chris, for a lot of people, myself included, you are the guy that sort of embodies what it means to be an effective listener. Have you always been that way?
No. I think I've always been a guy who's tried to figure things out. And I like figuring things out faster than other people do, if I can. And then that, you know, becomes sort of a proactive experience, which then folds right into what, you know, good listening is. Figure out what's going on. If you want to figure out what's going on faster than anybody else, you got to listen.
And is that a skill that you developed? Like, what was your process for doing that? You weren't born with it, it doesn't sound like.
Well, yeah, it's a skill that you develop. I mean, Daniel Goleman wrote a book, Daniel Coyle wrote a book called The Talent Code, and he contends that everything is learned. Even, you know, people that we think are prodigies, whichever, they just picked it up at an earlier age and got interested, got their 10,000 hours in before anybody really noticed. So, I learned it. It's teachable. It's learnable. It kind of depends upon how coachable you are, how good you are at learning. You need to be coachable. You need to be hardworking. Ideally, you're not terribly neurotic, because then you have a tendency to get in your own way because you think, you know, your amygdala short circuits you. But yeah, it's learnable. It's very easy to develop if you put your mind to it.
But you know, you're in the FBI for 24 years. You're involved in 150 plus negotiations. You don't necessarily have time to learn on the job, I wouldn't think. So what's your process, if you can remember, like taking me back to how you start to sharpen some of these skills?
Yeah, well, the first part of the process was really, I volunteered on a suicide hotline, a crisis hotline. And then it was such an accelerator for communication. Empathy, tactical empathy, empathy saves time. Actually understanding, actually making the other side feel understood. That's a critical issue. It's really not terribly relevant whether or not you understand. What's relevant is whether or not you make them feel understood. So I go volunteer on a suicide hotline because I'm told I have to in order to become a hostage negotiator. And when I first get there for the training, they explain to me that you won't be on a phone with anybody longer than 20 minutes. And as a matter of fact, you should be getting done a lot sooner than that if you're using the skills properly. And I remember thinking to myself, that's insane. How could someone be struggling with a problem that might be a life problem, and I'm going to unwind this in 20 minutes? And it turned out to be the truth. So that was such an accelerator in that environment that I thought, this got applied to everyday life. And I started applying it to everyday life and business life, personal life, and learning it and getting good at it and adapting it into those situations. And it gets people to decisions faster. Crisis hotline, somebody calls in, they're unable to make a decision other than maybe they're thinking about killing themselves. That's a decision. And what you want to get them to do is say, okay, that's our decision. Let's brainstorm some other decisions. And then get them to make a decision, ideally, other than killing themselves, at the end of this 20 minutes or less. It's just bringing somebody quickly to a decision that's thought through. That's life, you know. You got to make a decision what time to go to the grocery store, whether or not to go to Starbucks, you know, whether or not to collaborate on a project. That's decision-making. So empathy accelerates the decision-making process.
And I guess the inclination for someone that's untrained is to try to talk someone out of things. I know as a sales professional, this is what we do all the time. We hear an objection. We hear someone saying, I'm going to jump, and you try to tell them all the reasons why they should live. And these things just don't really land the same, to your point.
All right, yeah. Well, I think we attribute this to Reagan. Ronald Reagan said a long time ago, if you're explaining, you're losing. You know, to explain, to talk somebody into or out of something is to explain, is to make an argument, is to make a case. That's got nothing to do with making the other side feel understood. It really has to do with beating the other side, showing the other side you're smarter than they are. You know, if you're explaining something to someone, the inherent message is you're right, they're wrong, and you're correcting them. That's bad for relationships under anybody's definition. It's bad. It diminishes influence. It diminishes long-term relationships. It diminishes collaborations. It's just, it's really bad. And I think the biggest disservice is, you know, they portray this in the movies and TV all the time. The bad habits that are portrayed in movies and television, and then at the end of every bad habit, then somebody says, oh, thank God. And it never goes down like that in real life. And so, you know, absent seeing someone do it properly, which is rare, nobody knows. You know, people see, you see people explaining stuff all the time. And then everybody wonders why collaboration is so inefficient. They think, well, collaboration is inefficient. No, it's not. It's bad communication.
And so when you were on the crisis hotline, when someone would say something about wanting to end their life or they didn't want to live any longer, were you trained on how to respond to that and what to say? Did you learn mirroring at that point? Did you learn labeling at that point? Or were these things afterwards? I'm just trying to understand like how you started off on this path. I mean, you're so fluid at it now. It's almost like you've been playing Hotel California for 20 years, but I would imagine at some point you weren't as fluid. For people that are just starting out, I want to know, like, what was your starting point?
The real starting point was what we now call labeling. You know, in hostage negotiation, we called it emotion labeling. There was a different term on a crisis hotline back then, but that's what it was. It was emotion labeling. It was labeling. And we've slightly adapted that for business. But it's basically calling out the emotion of the dynamic you're hearing. And so just listening really closely for that dynamic and calling it out. And if you're trained to do that, it's a little bit of, you know, the old Karate Kid movie, wax on, wax off. You know, Karate Kid doesn't know he's learning self-defense. He doesn't know he's learning these perfect self-defense movements. He's just being taught the movements. And then suddenly he finds himself in a fight and he does the movements and they work astonishingly. Which is pretty much exactly on the crisis hotline. Here's what we want you to listen for, and here's how we want you to feed it back. And then you do it, and like, holy cow! Wow! Well, I mean, what just happened? I mean, you feel the instantaneous response from the other side.
Yeah, I saw you do this really well in the masterclass where you were going through an exercise with a woman that was talking about a passion that she had, and you were using just labeling and mirroring sort of simultaneously. And even though she knew what was going on, she was lost in it. It was almost therapeutic in a sense.
It all those things are true, yes. Because it's genuine. I mean, as soon as somebody's trying to manipulate you, you know, then it triggers your internal alarm bells and something's going wrong. But when it's genuine, you're like, okay, they're clearly trying to communicate with me. They're trying to demonstrate they're listening. So it's really the key is where you're coming from, not that you're using a tool or a technique or a tactic. And yeah, I mean, it becomes invisible. People lose themselves into it in the time and it builds rapport. And it, you know, now the crazy thing is we know neuroscience now, which is the amount of information we have from the neurochemicals that are released in the body in this process tells us so much more. I mean, I could talk about the neurochemicals that are released. You're trying to trigger release of oxytocin in the other side, which is the bonding chemical. This stuff just works. And now that we know neuroscience, we actually know why it works so quickly.
Yeah, there's a great moment in your book where you're talking to your son about football and a position that he was moved to. And he felt like less of a man. It was a less of a masculine, position. And one of the things that struck me is this is a technique that I've been practicing. But what I have a tendency to do is I can't quite understand what the person's really feeling. I have a tendency to repackage or re-say what they're saying, which is very different than what you did in the book, which is you had like an insight. Like you knew that when he was being moved from this position, that he was going to feel like he wasn't blocking and tackling anymore, and he was going to feel kind of less than. And you you labeled that, and that was the moment that ultimately led to the that's right. But how do you get those insights? You did it again in the masterclass, and I've seen you do it a bunch of times, but that's a skill. It's not just repeating back what you heard. There's this other layer to it where you're understanding the real feeling that's going on there.
Yeah, just practice. I mean, there are different ways of thinking about it that can help you get it quicker. Like there's something called the Johari window, which basically breaks down into what drives us. We're either hiding from others, we're holding it to ourselves, or we're blind to it. So you know, I might ask myself, what's driving this person that they've become blind to? You know, what's the underlying emotion? How's this layered? I mean, from practice and only from practice, I learned that if you're afraid, anger underlies that. And if you're afraid and you're angry, you probably feel isolated and alone. Now, we learned this on a hotline because people are always isolated, alone, angry, upset, frustrated. We thought it was basically due to crisis response. In point of fact, human survival wiring, which we walk around in survival mode all the time, our survival wiring is actually mostly negative by about a 3-to-1 ratio because we needed to be negative in the caveman days to survive. The optimistic caveman, said, hey, last time Fred Flintstone walked into a dark cave, he never came out, but I'm optimistic. I'm going to go in there anyway. That guy got eaten. He didn't have any ancestors. But the pessimistic caveman survived. Now, that was needed back then, but it's not needed now. It plays against us. Success mode is not survival mode. Success mode has to be optimistic to maximize your success. So, long story short, everybody's normal operating system is survival, which is mostly negative, which is what makes this so powerful.
So when you're in these situations where you're negotiating for someone's life with a terrorist, it's not that you have to agree or take their perspective. It's like you just have to understand where they're coming from and make them feel like you understand where they're coming from. So much of what you do is just allowing them to understand that you get them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds stupid that would be a game-changing moment. And it is. And the only way to ever accept that is to test drive it. And then, get a game-changing moment and go like, what? How did I didn't even have to argue with him.
Yeah. Well, I noticed this a couple weeks ago. There was a neighbor that we have that was being really loud at night during the quarantine, pool parties and music. My wife was screaming over the fence. Keep it down, this went on for like 5 days. And I said, let's think about what would Chris Voss do in this situation. We can't go over to the house. We don't have her number, but we can write her a letter. And so we sat down, we opened up your book. And the first sentence we said was something like, hey, this is a really embarrassing letter to write. I don't even know your name.
All right.
And it sounds like you're having an unbelievable party at your house. Quite honestly, we're jealous. How could we work together so that you can have a good time and we can still get to go to bed, even though we're such early birds? Clearly you're having a better time than we are since we're only able to stay up till 9 o'clock. In that tone, and she put it in the mailbox, and it's been 3 weeks and not a peep after 10.
Very nice.
And I think this is that kind of approach you're getting at, which is this idea of trying to label how other people are feeling and not take the defensive, because my inclination is to shout over the fence. Keep it down. And that's what we do with salespeople. When people push back, is we try to convince, why should I select you? Another great moment in that negotiation you had with the father from Haiti, when he was like, how are you qualified? And, talk a little bit about that. We weren't trying to convince him as to why you were qualified, which is what salespeople would do, which is what my wife was trying to do with the neighbor. Like, keep it down. Let me tell you my point of view. What was your take on that?
Well, really, sales, vast majority of cooperation is demonstrating to the other side, again, that you get it or you get what they're faced with. And, this is just so not taught. We're on the phone, my son and I. My son runs my company. Brandon runs the Black Swan Group. We're on the phone with a potential HR consultant the other day. The guy doesn't know any better, but he's pitching all the time. And he starts out by saying, I looked you guys up. And then he's like, all right, so how can I help you? Well, look, Jack, if you looked us up, you should have an idea of how you could help us. But he doesn't know to start demonstrating that he understands what we're faced with. What I did with the Haiti father was I just said, look, here's what you're looking at. And kidnapping is a commodities business. You know, this is off to the side. I didn't say this to him. But so I got to describe to him the business he's looking at without making him want to see that it's a business. So I say to him, Haitian kidnappers are not killing kidnapped victims these days. I realize that's really stupid because they kill each other at the drop of a hat. But for whatever reason, the fact remains they're not killing kidnapped victims. Now, today's Thursday, and Haitian kidnappers love to party on Saturday night. So if you say what I want you to say when I want you to say it, we'll have you sent out by late Friday, early Saturday morning. Now, I didn't try to get him to say yes. I didn't tell him what I wanted him to say. I didn't tell him how we were going to work out when I wanted him to say that. I actually didn't give him any actual answers at all. What I did was I demonstrated entirely, here's what you're looking at. So I'm on the phone with this HR consultant the other day, and he wants to explain to us all the different companies he worked for. He says, well, you know, I've worked from companies every bit from 3 employees to 5,000 employees. Now, he's trying to explain to us he's got this depth of experience, but I don't care what he knows about 5,000 employee companies. I got a 5-person employee company. So all the time that he spends trying to give me the depth of his experience is utterly wasted time. After having told us that he looked this up, at no point in time did he try to demonstrate that he understood anything about us. And we kept waiting for him to say, all right, so here's what a company your size is up against. You know, you're probably doing this, you're probably doing that. This is what the environment's going to do to you. It would have been a game-changing moment. We had a 45-minute conversation with this guy. Finally, at the end, he threw out a couple of nuggets on potentials, the information that might be useful to us. But it took him so long to get to that information. I don't have time for every conversation to be 45 minutes long to get 1 minute of value. I'm just not going to do it.
What is going on? These are well-intentioned people that have read, like I have, all sales books. And maybe that's the problem, Chris. Maybe everyone's reading sales books. Like, this is so pervasive. I do a tremendous amount of sales training as well. I get a lot of cold calls. I get a lot of salespeople pitching me stuff. It's so pervasive, not just in sales, but also in my personal life. Anytime I'm at the table and there's a discussion with people that have different political views, everyone's trying to convince. But what is going on with the HR professional? Why is this so pervasive? What is going on?
So much. You got nothing. Everybody's got nothing but bad examples around them. Mediocre examples. And, you know, when everybody's running a 5-minute mile, you don't think it's possible to run a 4-minute mile till somebody does it. You know, you got to see it. And it's so rare that you're actually seeing people do this. Or the crazy thing is sometimes you do see it get done, and unless you're really aware of what just happened, you're like, wow, that was nuts. That was a fluke. That'll never happen again. People are afraid of change. So, you know, there's so many mediocre examples. And another thing also is what most people refer to as best practices are actually just common practices. And if everybody's engaged in best practices, they by definition become common practices, which means you distinguish yourself in no way, none. So what do you expect?
Yeah, and plus, I don't know if you agree, but also when you give someone your opinion as a salesperson, you don't really have any credibility because you have commission breath, right? It's like you're biased, right? Of course, you're going to say all these great things, but your approach that you teach, which I've been trying to adopt specifically when trying to diffuse objections, and I've stopped calling it overcoming objections, even that word that is taught so commonly in the sales community, overcoming things with some rebuttal script. This is what you say to make it go away. When I made the switch to just understanding instead of overcoming, the objection kind of melts but what, and the prospect actually starts to tell you what would work for them. And ultimately they get to decide. People change for their reasons, not yours. So it's a phenomenal approach. I also noticed, Chris, in the Haiti example, and even in the HR example that you just gave, one of the things that also stood out for me was you're also providing some insight, a unique perspective, a take, not a salesy, I can do this better, but this is how I view the world. Look, I've been here. This is what I know about what you're facing. And that makes me feel very confident. How much of that can be learned? Again, these are tricky concepts for a lot of salespeople who are used to vomiting value propositions rather than explaining their unique take, which is a sense of a part of what makes that discussion with the Haitian father so impactful.
Well, you know, part of the insight into the dynamic in the environment, I mean, it's, if you break it down, it's so ridiculously simple. You begin to put predictability into the future. Take the word trust out of your vocabulary, drop in a word predictability. Every bit of predictability that you personally bring to an interaction, then it automatically builds trust. And most people don't have their mind wrapped around the implications of that, because you don't realize that you always leave your counterpart wondering when they're going to hear from you again, because you only want to call when you have results, or you only want to call when you have something to say. Well, that means they don't know when they're going to hear from you. But put the slightest bit of predictability. What I did with his father is, here's the dynamic. Here's some predictability issues. Basically, if we follow the guidelines, here's when the deal will close. This is how long it'll take. This is how long it should close if we follow the guidelines. I mean, it's kind of that simple. The slightest bit of predictability that you start dropping back into a situation, you build instant trust.
So in the sales world, what we often hear is a prospect saying something like, "Hey, I've been looking at two or three vendors like you, Chris. You know, you're a negotiator. We're looking at, you know, two," maybe you hear this in your business, "you know, we're looking at two or three other negotiation trainers. Why should we select you?" It's very similar to the Haitian father example.
Well, if somebody tells me that, I'm going to back up a second, because I got to get commission breath off. I got to get out of commission breath. And the minute you start telling them why, you got commission breath. So the best thing to cleanse yourself, to heal yourself, cleanse yourself, you should stop and say, "Wow, that is a great question. Why would you select me?" Because here's the big problem that every salesperson has. There's like only one of two nuggets of value in a book called The Challenger Sale. But the big one is 20% of your opportunities are false opportunities. You are the fool in the game. You're being lied to. They're not going to go with you. They need you as the competing bid. And if there's anything about your bid, since you're the fool in the game, that they like, then they're going to use that term to drive down the price or the terms on a favor. Or they're not going to buy from anybody, and they want free consulting. Which, you know, the HR guy the other day, like, I'm going to let him talk long enough till he finally says something valuable. I'm taking that back to who our favorite is and say, "Oh, by the way, here's a dynamic I just learned about. I need you to deal with." So the free consulting issue is a problem. The fool in the game, you're the rabbit. You know, some people, the rabbit's just there to drive down a price, drive down a terms on a favorite. You got a problem at the opening bell. Decision science tells us that every one of your prospects have either already made up their mind before they talk to you, or they're 80% of the way through the process, which means the harsh reality is, by definition, you will never speak to anybody who has an open mind. They have already, they're at least 80% of the way through their decision process. You proceed without diagnosing where they are in that process, you are now spinning your wheels and looking down at your your speedometer going like, wow, I'm going fast, but you're spinning your wheels.
So that question you asked, it's almost like you're trying to talk people out of it. You're almost trying to talk people out of working with you. What's the psychology behind, hey, that's a great question. What would prompt you to switch from what you're using now to us? We've only been around for 3 years.
No, the other side is they're going to feel safe without realizing they're going to expose it where they are in the decision-making process. They've got to, if you are not the fool in the game, if you are the fool in the game, they're going to throw it right back on you and say, well, again, that's up to you. Well, when somebody responds like that to you, what they're telling you is prior to this interaction, they haven't had a thought in their head of doing business with you. And if they're 80% of the way through the process, at least, and they don't have a thought in their head about doing business with you, they're not going to. You know, this is the way the human brain works. Anybody listening to this podcast, start research. Don't take my word for it. Research decision making. Research anything about decision processes. There isn't a decision process out there where when someone's looking to buy something, the first place they go to is the vendor because you got commission breath. Where do they go? Previous trusted advisors. Google search, gathering data, beginning to construct what the decision looks like. Now, most people would not refer to this as having a closed mind, but if this is traveling down the decision-making process and you're 80% of the way through the process, when you still when you contact a vendor, that is not an open mind. And the salesperson, the supplier of the service, the supplier of the product has got to find out where they are. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. So it triggers their response in a safe way. You're not accusing them of anything. You're asking to be enlightened.
You mentioned, Chris, staying away from why, and I noticed you used it in this context, and there's no absolutes with words.
Well, it kind of is an absolute with why. So that was very good that you picked that up.
Because that why can kind of trigger like you're scolding an angry teen.
Why always triggers defensiveness. In this instance, they get the opportunity to defend you. And that's the 2 millimeter shift. You could count on the word why to always trigger defensiveness. Count on it. And if you think not, then run your own data.
Well, I have a story. $125,000 sale, a formality to talk to the signer, on the call with him and 4 people from his team. And he asked a very innocent question. He goes, can you supply hourly rates? And I said, well, why would you want those? And he lost it. What do you mean? Why would you even ask me for that? Of course I want. And he got so angry, that deal was lost. I had to go tell my boss that was lost. And so that stuck with me. I've written about it. I've told people about that story. But I didn't know at the time, this was 8 years ago, like why that was and what I could have done differently. And so in a situation like that now, I would probably say something like, you know, hey, it sounds like you understanding, you know, how we tick is important to you. You know, it's something more like that before you, because that why stuff, it's dangerous. And it's part of the salesperson's lexicon. We ask it all the time. And it just, I notice it now more than ever after being exposed to your materials. What is it triggering?
What's causing that to trigger? My son's opinion is that every human being on the planet, when we were 2 years old and we broke something, that the nearest monster next to you, adult, you know, the gargantuan creature that was bigger than you and scared you to begin with because they were 3 times as big as you were, pointed a finger at you and said, why did you do that? And the innocent little 2-year-old, after a while, catches on. Every time somebody asks me why, I just did something wrong. And then once that's burned into your psyche, it's never going to go away. You're why battered.
Right. And it's hard to get out of that habit. And so you suggest using what and how questions. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, And first of all, let me back up a little bit, because if you get asked for something, I love the fact that you threw a label into that. You know, you could have responded to them like, you know, that's a great question. What makes you feel that you need this data? Or, you know, what makes that me answer
important to you? What makes that important to you?
What makes that important to you? That's a great what question. The next level up is definitely converting that question to a label, which is what you just did. And that's one of the advanced skills that we've spent a lot of time teaching people when we give training sessions now that we didn't emphasize in a book, is to switch from your questions to labels to gather the same information. That's nice job. That's taking it the next level up.
Yeah, so one of the things that really helped me get better at using labels and mirrors to become a better listener is your masterclass. It was awesome. In particular, the practice routine you did with someone where you asked about her passion and then used labels and mirrors to make her feel heard and understood. So let's do that exercise to give people a sense of what that sounds like. My passion, Chris, is triathlons.
All right. So I'm going to ask one what question, so everybody knows how this is going to go down, because you already said normally it would be two. What are you passionate about? But you already answered that one. I'll ask one what question, and I'll follow with nothing but labels and mirrors. All right, so what about triathlons makes you passionate?
Yeah, so my dad died of cancer at 50, always wanting to do one. And so when I started to approach 50, I wanted to cross the finish line for him. I was overweight at the time by about 40 pounds heavier than I am now, and started to take small steps and running, and started to make me feel really good, especially when I met the people in the community, and just have been at it ever since. It's been about 3 years now.
About 3 years now?
Yeah, about 3 years. I started off with a small block on my street. I literally could not run to the stop sign. And from that stop sign, I ended up taking a loop. And now I'm 3 years later able to run, you know, 13, 14, 15 miles.
You sound like a determined guy.
I am. I there's days when I wake up and I don't want to get out of bed, but I make myself do it. I push myself out the door, and I always feel better for it in the end.
Sounds like you and your dad were close.
Ooh. We were really close, and I lost him way too early. And scene. So this again, Chris, so much of the magic that you see. That's a great example of what you just did there. Sounds like your dad and you were close. And I know this is just a role play, but that really hit me. I didn't specifically say that. So how did you know what was implied?
All right. So first of all, when I said that, what'd you feel?
Goosebumps, literally. And I almost teared up a little bit, honestly. And I don't even know you. That, I mean, I know you from your work, but we've never had a conversation before.
All right. So for those of you playing at home, he got a jolt of some neurochemicals when I said that. He probably got some serotonin. He probably got a bit of a hit of oxytocin. Now, how did I know to say that? Way back when, you know, my best lines I've heard from somebody else and I felt it myself. I'm having a conversation with a buddy of mine, FBI Academy cafeteria, before I became a hostage negotiator. Both me and my buddy are thinking about, do we want to be profilers? Do we want to be negotiators? Both of them sound kind of cool. We dig, you know, human insight. And so I'm laying out a whole bunch of family stuff to them because, you know, we just happen to be shooting a breeze. And I laid out that my family was close, but I didn't say that. It was implied by all the things that I said. And I remember this moment clear as day. He said, it sounds like your family's really close. And I can remember how good it felt in the moment. It drew everything together. I didn't know anything about neuroscience, neurochemicals at the time. I just knew it felt amazing. It drew everything together. And I had thrown out some hits. And he'd said, sounded like you and your family were close. And so now I know it was a combination of probably serotonin, oxytocin, not necessarily dopamine. But these are chemicals that make us feel amazing. you know, we assume it's an emotional reaction, and it is, but it's neuroscience. So what do I do? I know how powerful that is if I hear it. So what am I listening for? You start out on the triathlon stuff, and you right away you start talking about your dad and the memory of your father. Like, you are not knocking yourself out the way you're knocking yourself out as an aspect of a legacy of your father's memory unless you guys were close. And so you've given me the hints. I've waited for you to give me the hints. I've got this one. There are probably 5, 6, 7 labels that I know if I hear the hints, if I hear the clues, it's like an investigation. I'm going to drop that baby out there because you've given me the hints. So I'm just taking an educated, emotionally intelligent guess based on what you said.
Well, something else that strikes me too when I went through that exercise just now and I've watched you do it is you're not faking it. Like, you and I don't know each other, but I felt that you're genuinely curious.
Yeah.
When I've listened to the masterclass, and guys, again, for this masterclass, you actually get to hear the tapes. It's fascinating of the actual FBI, like the back in the day when Chris's hair was messed up going on CNN, like back in those days.
Hey, no inside jokes. Huh? You can't be telling people.
His hair looks good now if you're not seeing this video, but this is what, like, This is not a tactic to get what you want. I think this is the thing that's working with you so well, Chris. And what I'm trying to work on is being like genuinely curious. Like, when we went through this exercise, I did feel like you cared. Is that technique, or are you just wired that way?
No, you know, I got to tell you something. I actually really care about people, and I'm, you know, and my natural state is a little rough around the edges. You know, I could be a little blunt to deal with occasionally. So much so that if I'm being really blunt, people misunderstand that as how much I care. But I will tell you that I genuinely care about people. And so, yeah, it's not part of an act. It's part of who I am.
And even when you're in those situations, when you're negotiating for people's lives, you're still curious about their perspective?
Yeah.
Or is there a part of you that's like, oh, I'm dealing with this person that's just like, that's a tough rope?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely curious about their perspective. I know while we may have made some really bad decisions, you know, we're all kind of driven by the same thing. You know, we want to feel like we matter. You know, terrorists do it because they want to feel like they matter. I remember way back when. It's a great documentary on the original hostage taking of the Israeli athletes in Munich in 1972. The documentary is called One Day in September. It's brilliant. Brilliant. One Day in September. Now, the crazy thing, most people don't know, the hostage taking of the Israeli athletes, all the bad guys got away, and the Israeli Secret Service hunted them all down one at a time and killed every one of them, one at a time, except one. And they got the one on the documentary, which shocks me because the documentary filmmakers are some, you know, they're Jewish dudes, and they get this Palestinian to sit for an interview. And I'm thinking, like, how do these documentary filmmakers find this guy when the Mossad can't find him because the Mossad's still trying to kill him? You know, but this poor schmuck, he talks about growing up in a Palestinian refugee camp. And he grew up believing he was wretched refuse. And I've been in the Palestinian refugee camps, and these are tough places. And to imagine a child growing up there, and what's a child, how's a child going to interpret its worth having grown up in that location? So, yeah, that's what this guy was being driven by. Now, don't get me wrong. If I was a hostage negotiator and this guy gave me no choice and I needed to recommend the sniper take him out, I would make that recommendation. That does not stop me from understanding him or her and not being able to display that understanding. And, you know, agreement is not required to understand.
Such a powerful concept.
Yeah.
And just making people more productive outside of work. But you mentioned Palestine and Israel. It kind of made me think that's a conflict that's been going on for a long time. Like since the 1920s, what's going on there? Like, why haven't they brought you in? Is that a negotiation or is that something entirely different?
You know, there are a lot of really smart people that have been working on that, taking a whack at it every now and then. And, you know, they make progress occasionally. You know, no progression is ever a straight line. I will tell you, probably about 10 years ago, and I think they're still in existence, there were younger people on both sides of the issue that were getting together to try to work things out because before they became so old and jaded that all they wanted to do was argue. So I remain optimistic overall. I know people on both sides of the issue, on all sides of many of the issues in the Middle East, Arab, Israeli, Jewish, Christian, they're good people on all sides of those issues that are just trying to give their families a better place to live. And as soon as that's somebody's orientation, then you can probably talk stuff through with them.
What would your, if they brought you into that and you agreed, like, what would your, like, how would you do that? Or like, what would your approach be?
I'd say, everybody read my book.
Right. Exactly. That's
the
right answer.
You know, it's the outside influences that get in the way there. You know, there are people outside of the equation that don't want to have it worked out. And so, you know, the Palestinians have been, there are people with other agendas that are trying to work through them that are not in their best interests. And there's the Israelis got the same issue. There are people trying to work through them that don't have the Israelis' best interests in mind. So, you know, I think progress is continually made. It's just, unfortunately, there's a heavy cost along the way.
I love the optimism. If you're listening out there in Israel or Palestine, fly Chris out there and have him bring a carton of books. So, Chris, I want to end with 60 seconds or she dies.
Oh, you want to step in the ring, huh?
I do want to step in the ring, Chris Voss. So for those of you that don't know, 60 seconds or she dies is an exercise Chris dreamed up to practice labeling and mirroring. Here's how it works. I am a hostage negotiator. Chris is the bad guy in the bank with a bunch of hostages. I have to use labeling and mirroring to stop the 60-second clock. If I do it properly and the bank robber feels heard, the clock stops. If I don't, it keeps ticking. Let's do this, Chris Voss. Ring, ring.
I need a call in 60 seconds or she dies.
So my name is Josh, and I'll be working with you today. And Chris,
who's Chris?
I think is that your name? I'm sorry.
Who's Chris? I have no intention of telling you my name. You've got 50 seconds.
That's not a problem. Hey, I want to ensure that you get what you want.
Oh, so you're going to give me a car. Cool. Excellent. We got a deal. How soon is it going to be out front? Because you got 45 seconds left.
Out front?
Yeah, out front. You just said you want to make sure I got what I wanted.
I do. I want to make sure. So when you get the
cool. Excellent. So how, you know, car, now you got 40 seconds.
So when the car's out front,
you've agreed to the car. Let's just be clear. You have agreed to the car.
I would like to be able to get you what you want.
Wait a minute. You said before, you said you wanted to, now you're backing off.
It sounds like you want to get out of here and you want to get out of here in one piece.
There you go. Good. That's the plan.
How's it going to work if
you're going to put the car out front, which you already told me you were going to do. 35 seconds.
How do we know the hostages are still alive?
They are. I just told you. Everybody's fine. 30 seconds.
Oh, my God. I can't do it anymore. That assertive voice is killing me. I give up. Take the car. Kill the hostages. Whatever you want, man. I'm out.
No. Stop. Time. Chill. Now, first of all, I know your heart rate's through the roof. We're well past 60 seconds. Well past. I mean, I'm not keeping a clock on you. You stopped me dead in my tracks several times. You made a couple of inadvertent errors. You got punished for them. You did some good stuff. You know, you start out, salesman's technique. You're busy using you're trying to use my name against me from the beginning. If you don't think every salesman on the planet already done that, now. I know what you're doing. I feel the shove. I feel the hook. As soon as you start using my name, it's nonsense that my name is the sweetest word in all sound in all of creation. And every time you use my name, it sprinkles fairy dust on top of my head and makes me happy. No. It's been overdone, which means I'm name battered. So you didn't ask my name at all. You just started using it. Who gave you permission to use my name? Nobody. Plus, on top of that, the problem is I'm not getting to know you in the meantime. You know, I was talking to a person in sales one time. Said, you know, we're having trouble getting calls back because we spend so much time getting to know them. Then they just don't call us back. I said, that's exactly the problem. He said, what? I said, yeah, they don't know who you are. No idea who you are. You look like every other salesperson. You're trying to demonstrate to them how much you know about them. And they feel the manipulation in the show.
So like when I said, hey, you know, I want to make sure that I get you what you want, it kind of comes across as disingenuous.
I've already asked for a car. And do you have any intention of giving me a car?
No.
So that's a lie. And that's what a lot of people, they don't. And now you didn't do that maliciously. There's a massive amount of lying going on in our world, in the business world. And it's not malicious lying. It's because people just don't know how to gently tell the truth.
They don't have the words.
Right. So, they go like, all right, let me kind of act like I'm going along with this and maybe I could buy enough time if something good will happen. You know, I actually had somebody once say to me, I'll lie to him as long as I have enough time to fix it. Well, here's a crazy idea. Let's not lie at all. But that's easier said than done. Because you don't really know how to not lie and not agree. Now you know, the first thing is demonstrate, make the other side feel understood. Later on down that call, you started to make me feel understood when you said, you know, it sounds like you want to get out of there intact. Boom. Nice, very nice. Well, you also didn't notice at the time because you felt battered. But the clock had stopped ticking at that point in time. You got the clock to stop ticking entirely several times through that interaction. It's very hard to see first time in the middle of it, or even if you've seen it otherwise. And that's where you get your practice in. That's where you get your repetitions in. You go back and you think about what you did well, and you look to duplicate that. You think about what didn't go well, and you're delighted to have been informed. Now you know what to discard. And then you go back and work on what did well. You did a lot of stuff well. And when you were demonstrating understanding as opposed to actually dealing with overcoming the objection, when you talked about what was causing the issue, the demand, the objection, as soon as you dig into that, it's instantly a different ballgame. So you did a lot of stuff in that was really good.
Even this feedback, I just want everyone to listen to this. This again is happening when I'm talking to Chris Voss, and it's so rare because I never feel it. Managers, if you're listening, usually when I've gotten feedback from people from role-playing exercises that I've done, it's always been all the things I did wrong, and which I have no problem getting constructive feedback. But what you did, Chris, even with this, and again, maybe this is just how you're wired, man. But like even the way you just provided the feedback, it felt so good and motivational and building me up while also telling me the things that I should work on. I mean, it's just masterful, man. I don't know if this is how you're wired or what it is, man, but it was incredible.
Well, in my company, what we're wired for is to help people succeed as quickly as possible. And we've come to learn the type of coaching that's going to accelerate your progress. And I got to tell you something, I don't care what kind of coaching it takes. Like if I could accelerate your progress to the maximum speed, put you in actually what we refer to as accelerated learning. If it meant that if I cut off your little finger, like I wouldn't care. I'd cut off your little finger because my goal is for you to get better as quickly as possible. So I don't care. But we found in constantly coaching people, because you got stuff at stake right now. And if you've come to me and my company, you know, to my team, we got to help you start fixing stuff right away. So we're going to coach you to accelerate your learning, to help you fix stuff now.
It's absolutely phenomenal. I do want to end with one thing, just so everyone can see the contrast. Chris, you have 60 seconds. I want a car.
Sounds like you want to survive this.
I do, but I want a car and I want to get out. Otherwise, I'm going to kill the hostages.
Sounds like the most important thing here is that you see tomorrow.
It is. I want to see tomorrow, but I also want to get out of here right now.
So it's going to be tough. how am I supposed to do that?
I don't know. Hostages are coming out. My hands are up. I'm getting you a car. It's just, it's like going to yoga class and so calm. Chris, you have been so generous with your time. If people want to learn more about what you do, I know I do. Let's say I want to get better at this. I've taken your masterclass. I've read your book a bunch of times. I've watched, I think, pretty much every video you've ever put out there on the internet. If you guys haven't done that, turn off this podcast. It's far more interesting than listening to me. Chris, how do I get better? Like, where do I go from here? Let's just talk about me. I have a business. A lot of people do that are listening to this. There's a ton of salespeople listening to this, a ton of sales leaders. Like, how do you help us get better? What's your approach?
Well, the gateway, the best next step is a gateway. Subscribing to the newsletter. Comes out every Tuesday morning. It's short, sweet, it's concise, it's actionable, it's digestible. Some people's newsletters, like you got 10 different choices, you don't know what to do, so you don't read anything. We're going to send you one article per newsletter Tuesday morning. It's, by the way, it's complimentary, it's free. So you just read this, they're normally about 700 or so words. That's a page and a half. Tuesday morning's important because Monday's your mad scramble. Tuesday, you're getting down to business. Tuesday morning, you want to cue yourself up with negotiation thoughts because you're going to negotiate your way through the day. Now, the other thing about the newsletter is training announcements. It's the gateway to the website. You click on the article, it takes you to the website. Now, after you've read the letter, if you want, you browse a website for more free stuff or for our training. We're doing a massive amount of online training in today's environment. The best way to subscribe to the newsletter is to send a message, Black Swan Method. Three words, not case sensitive, to the number 33777. That's 33777. You send it to that number, Black Swan Method, spaces between those words. If you've sent it properly, you'll get a message back asking for your email address. We will keep you up to speed. A lot of people get a long way just on the articles. We get past articles. Whatever you're dealing with right now, we wrote an article about it. Supplement everything you've done with the newsletter. Again, the fact that it's concise and digestible is a big advantage. And then when you're ready to start really taking your skills quantum leaps forward, we've got more stuff for you.
I can attest to this as a subscriber to the newsletter, just to make it more crispy for people in specific. I got one a couple weeks ago, Chris, about what to do with prospects that called you and said, hey, I can't go through with this because of the pandemic. And I really, a lot of people were struggling with this. And your take on this, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but this opening line of, hey, Josh, we're going through a real shit show now, and you're probably concerned that you're going to lose some clients and that things are going to all fall through on your side. Like, I'm not delivering this halfway as well as you delivered it, but if you haven't seen this approach, sign up for the newsletter. Chris, that advice alone, let me just tell you what happened because I used it. I had four deals when this happened, all fall through. I used it word for word. Modified a little bit to fit my situation, easy to connect the dots. All four of these prospects came back and closed. The old approach would have been to say something like, when can I call you back? Let's put some time on the calendar because of the push. And so this newsletter is not a newsletter. It's a revenue maker. And it also feels good on the soul because the intent is to just understand, and everything else just takes care of itself from there.
Yeah, nice. Well done. First of all, you're coachable. You executed it, you know, and you let the stuff work. You let the stuff work its magic. Well done.
The hardest part is the silence part.
Yeah, no. And if you don't let it sink in, then what you've done is you squash your strategy. And so nice job letting it sink in.
Thanks, Chris. Also, your tonality, man. Like, is that something that you train? Like, I don't have your tonality. You have that late night DJ voice. You've got that soothing voice. I call you like the James Bond of negotiation. You got that Daniel Craig kind of vibe going for you, swagger. I'm just an old Jewish guy from Boca with a receding hairline. Like, is that tonality something that can be taught even if you don't have the Chris Voss sort of tone and tenor?
Yeah, no, you can learn it. Absolutely learn it. I mean, we describe it downward inflecting, slow your pace down. men or women can do it. I mean, we get a lot of feedback, women saying like, you know, I'm not, I don't have your voice. I'm a female. Watch Shark Tank. Lori Grenier has got it. Lori Grenier has the magic combination of, she's got this downward inflecting smooth voice and she's always smiling. And then you can feel there's an additional kick with that smile. And, you know, she tells Mark Cuban to shut up, and he does.
I love it. We'll leave it at that. Chris Voss, thank you for being so generous with your time, man. This has been a dream come true for me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, John.